You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. It's What's the Buzz, our weekly chat with the New Zealand Drug Foundation.
Look, our drug laws do not reflect the danger of drugs. In fact, our drug laws are what make drugs dangerous. By criminalising drug use and by criminalising drugs, you certainly make them far less safe, and the harms of being criminalised far outweigh, in my opinion, the harms of using certain drugs, and in particular cannabis.
Would you be able to outline some of these harms?
When someone gets a criminal record for use and possession of cannabis, and that is with you forever. If someone actually goes to prison for using or possessing drugs, that will have an incredible negative impact on that person's life and on that person's future, probably on that person's family, but certainly on their opportunities to work productively, on their opportunities to contribute to society, on their opportunities to even ensure they have good housing, ensure that their children get a good education. It can have such a negative impact on a person. It also means that we're not having honest conversations about cannabis use. We're saying drugs are bad, don't use drugs. Now, that's all very well to say, but when young people in particular actually use drugs, and we know that 99% of people who do use drugs don't have problematic drug use, they go, well, what was that about? Why are people telling us one thing when we can see and experience for ourselves something quite different?
Now, you oversaw the inquiry into drug law reform, and I was wondering what kind of progress that has seen so far. What kind of changes has that inquiry started making?
Australia or Victoria, as I'm probably more able to speak on, Victoria, we're very slow in moving forward on drug law reform. The inquiry that was run in reported in 2018, it made 50 recommendations, and I am pleased to say that a number of those have been picked up. And whether that's looking at how we prescribe some of the more addictive prescription medications, or more recently, we just changed the law in regards to access to overdose reversing medication like naloxone. So we have probably, out of the 50 recommendations, I think probably about 5 or 6 of them have been picked up. But what the report really found was that government needed to change its approach to drug policy. It needed to be better informed. It needed to have better data on drug users, which I think is probably something New Zealand could do as well. But it also, one of the recommendations was that it further investigate cannabis laws, and I'm now chairing an inquiry into the cannabis laws in Victoria, and that's due to report in a couple of months. So some of it's been picked up, but Australia is very slow, and we really do look to New Zealand quite often for some guidance in better and more progressive legislation.
So what do you think it would take for governments in Australia to start making some more progressive change, or more dramatic progressive change?
Look, I think one of the things is we talk about, the words roll off every politician and every police commissioner's tongue. You know, we have to treat drug use as a health issue, not a criminal one. And yet we continue to treat it as a criminal one. And we continue to lock people up, and we continue to prosecute people for drug use. So that needs to change. We need to walk the walk on this, and if we are serious about saying treat drug use as a health issue, then we need to stop making laws criminalising criminalising people. I think that the community has turned, and certainly in most of the polling that I see, the vast majority of Australians believe that drug use should be decriminalised. And a large minority believe that cannabis should be legalised and regulated. So the public has moved on. It's now time for governments to catch up. In regards to cannabis, I would say one of the most effective ways to get our governments to change their policy is to work out how they can possibly make money from it. And whether that's the savings from taking it out of the criminal system, or whether that's through the regulation and taxation of the products. But certainly I think money, sadly, money talks, and I would certainly think that if we can find a way for governments to make money from cannabis, then they would be much more open to changing those laws.
Do you think if it came down to a referendum regarding the decriminalisation of cannabis, it would pass fairly easily?
Yeah, I do. For decriminalisation, yes. For legalisation, and as you guys have just experienced, talking about the legalisation and regulation of cannabis can be difficult. It can be a complex conversation. I mean, I think that the legislation, the model legislation that was introduced into New Zealand was excellent. It was really bespoke, and it suited New Zealand. In fact, it would suit Australia as well. It wasn't the American model. It wasn't a European model. It was very much our model. But it's hard to fully articulate that to people when people have had decades and decades and decades of people telling them that cannabis is bad, that cannabis will cause all sorts of problems, when what we know is the criminalisation of cannabis largely causes most of those problems. And with better education, we can prevent some of the harms that cannabis can cause.
I mean, in regards to the proposed legislation here, do you think that they were just trying to do too much too soon? Do you think maybe smaller steps, like starting with decriminalisation, may have been easier to get across? And I'm sure you'd find a similar situation in Australia as well.
Yeah, look, I don't want to agree with you, Annika, but I kind of do. Certainly I think decriminalisation, you wouldn't have needed a referendum. I think you probably would have got close to bipartisan support for decriminalisation if in a modest way. But that really doesn't solve the criminal issue. That still means that there is a large criminal market. And while decriminalisation certainly has its positives, and it enables us to address some of the discrimination and stigma around drug users, it enables us to help people with problematic drug use get better treatment, and it enables us to have more honest conversations with young people about their drug use. But it still is an imbalance where the use may be legal, but the supply is illegal. And that still creates criminal connections. It still means that people are dealing with criminals. I mean, certainly it would help homegrown, but, we can all grow our own tomatoes, but most of us don't.
Now, I'd like to move on and just have a quick chat about your work in securing the first medically supervised injecting centre in Victoria back in 2018. So, I mean, just to start off with, could you please explain what a medically supervised injecting centre is and what its purpose is?
Yeah. A medically supervised injecting room is a facility where people who use drugs intravenously can go to and use those drugs in that place under supervision and under medical supervision. So if they were to have a reaction, if they were to have an overdose, there is medical team there to assist them. So its fundamental purpose is to prevent people from dying from overdoses. But it also plays a really important role. And to me, this is kind of, you know, the facility itself is the sort of loss leader to introduce people to the health system, to introduce people to health professionals who care whether they live or die, who can start talking about treatment options, can start talking about what life might be like if they weren't caught up with their addictions. And so we know that for many people coming into that supervised injecting centre, it's the first time that they've been able to have a personal conversation about what their life could look like and where they'd like to see their life in years to come, how they'd like to reconnect with their families, how they would like to secure proper housing, how they'd like to get back into education or back into employment. So to me, that's the real magic of these centres. But it also is about taking drug use off the streets. In North Richmond, where we've established the first centre, residents were calling ambulances, you know, every day. There was ambulance call-outs 24/7. There were sirens going. It felt like a war zone. And people were dropping dead in the street. And residents were having to, resuscitate people in their front yards or in the alleys down next to their driveways. So the residents pushed for this. They didn't want to see the people in their streets dying. It's controversial. It still has a lot of critics, but we know it's saving lives, and we know that, you know, as it matures, it will do more for the amenity of the area where it's situated.
So you're definitely seeing it have a positive impact in helping people with rehabilitation and a healthcare-based approach to drug addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even things like Hep C treatment. So as we know, a large percentage of people who use drugs intravenously have got hepatitis C, and this we found that a large number of people who are coming to the centre are taking up the treatment of Hep C, which is a brilliant thing, and it's a really brilliant first step in someone taking control of their own health. We've also seen hundreds of people move to other form opioid replacement therapy. So whether that's going on to methadone with counselling and assistance, or whether it's actually trying some of the newer, long-lasting buprenorphine type of products, which are proving to be incredibly effective in breaking that nexus between drug use and crime. All of a sudden people are not going out to have to buy drugs.
Has the local government had a positive response to the centre and the work it's doing?
Look, the local government worked with us really closely when we were establishing this, and this was a community-led campaign. So this was the residents of that community, the local traders of that community, but also the Salvation Army, the health, the pharmacists, the chemists, the fire brigade. It was everybody got behind it, including the local government. Now, look, there is still people. You know, there are still people with chaotic behaviour. There are still people who are not accessing the centre and are still using drugs in the area. But it has improved enormously. We're seeing the number of discarded needles drop significantly. We're seeing the number of people having overdoses drop significantly. In the first week of the centre opened, it reversed 12 overdoses. So it was 12 lives that it probably saved.
How much foot traffic does it tend to get per week?
It has 5,000 clients. So it would see almost all of them every week. It is incredibly busy. It's one of the busiest, it's certainly a busier centre than the New South Wales Centre, and it's probably one of the busiest in the world, which I think is, which is why, and I'm very grateful to the government that they've announced that they'll be opening a second centre, and that will, I hope, to alleviate some of the really heavy traffic that North Richmond is seeing.
This is The Wire, and that was What's the Buzz with the New Zealand Drug Foundation.
Why should you want to know?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.